Hey everyone, it's Eric Mills with Microsoft. I'm on the Windows Server Marketing Team for US OEM. Welcome to another episode of OEM TV. In today's episode, we're going to talk storage, and this is going to be a slightly more technical episode. If you're comfortable with the terms SAS and SAN and SATA and SCSI and SSD and even JBOD, then you're going to like this episode because we're going to talk about storage spaces, and I love storage spaces. It saves customers a ton of money, gives you another option for how to configure your storage, gives you a lot of flexibility for growth and a lot of scalability if you really want to take it up a notch. So in this video, we're going to walk you through setting up storage spaces for the first time. We're going to talk about where it's a fit, where it's not a fit. You know, we're going to compare it to SAN for those people that are considering a SAN versus storage spaces. We'll talk about some of the limitations and just take you step by step through the entire process. We'll also talk about storage tiering with SSDs, which I know you want to know about. So without further ado, let's check it out. Storage spaces on Windows Server.
In this short movie, we're going to go over the benefits and the components to the Windows storage stack. I think most of you have worked with some level of remote storage in the past, whether that be iSCSI or SAN storage or some third-party storage facility that allows you to separate compute and storage. Now, when you start talking about virtualization, there's two main components to virtualization. That's your compute, which runs on Hyper-V, and that's your storage, which can run on Hyper-V, it can run or run in a remote host. With Windows Server 2012 and higher, one of the benefits to the Hyper-V environment was that you could use remote SMB storage so long as it was remote SMB3 storage. SMB3 came out with Windows Server 2012. It's highly redundant, very fault tolerant, and very fast. And it also supports the speed of NIC teaming. That's going to be either inbox using switch independent NIC teaming, or you can use a third party NIC teaming solution that's hardware dependent. So the concept of virtual storage is simple. Virtual storage means you take a pool of hard disks and you start carving up pieces of the hard disk to use for different applications. You don't have to have a separate set of hard disks or a drive for each application. So virtualization, it's been around for a long time. Whenever you use a third-party SAN tool, one of the first things you do is you come in and you specify what disks you want to put into the array, and then you configure the parity for the array or the fault tolerance for the array, and then you start carving out LUNs. You're doing the same thing with Windows Server, except you don't have a third-party controller or a piece of hardware there to handle that dissemination of the disk infrastructure. It's all done now with the Windows Server storage stack and the fault tolerant infrastructure that comes with Windows Server 2012. We're going to show you in this movie how to set up and configure standalone storage spaces, but you should understand that storage spaces can also be set up within a cluster and it makes them fault tolerant. So the fault tolerance of a storage space is really going to be more depending on your disk infrastructure underneath it than it is the server infrastructure. You know, for example, if I had a JBOD enclosure, and then within the JBOD enclosure, let's say I had, you know, 20 SCSI disks, 20 SAS disks, and I had five or six other types of disks, that would be SATA or some other type of disk that you want to implement. When you set that up, the goal of that is really to give you the ability to tie up those disks the way you need to tie them up. And if you want to expand them, you can expand them dynamically on the fly. What that ends up doing is it's cost savings. You know, one of the biggest cost savings to storage spaces is the implementation of SSD and SAS disks together. A lot of times you address performance issues by getting faster spindles or faster disks. One of the things that comes with Windows Server 2012 and 2012 R2 is the ability to implement SSD storage pools, where you can basically do what's called storage tiering. You know, this used to be a feature that you only got with really expensive SANs. Storage tiering means as the IOs per second are reaching their limitation, what the storage space would do is it would use a policy to cut in more SSD storage to that workload, or even shift it up to a full SSD workload while it was needed, and then back to a SAS workload when it wasn't needed. An example of that might be like the tempdb drives for a SQL Server. If you've got an application that uses a lot of SQL Server temp tables, you tend to have a lot of DDL allocation, deallocation, contention as you're setting up and running your applications. So a lot of DBAs would use SSD disks to address that. One of the things with storage space is that you can now set up automatic tiering. So if the SSD disks weren't needed, they wouldn't be used. And it doesn't force you to statically tie up your SSD disks where they're not needed and they're being underutilized. So virtualization, probably the biggest benefit is cost, because now you can pool your resources. The second biggest benefit is going to be flexibility, because if you run out of space, you can add more disks and expand your storage space. You can also use SAS, SATA, and SSD disks all in the same space. So it doesn't have to be the same type of disk, although it's recommended you use the same type of disk if you can. It doesn't have to be. So it's a pool of disks which can then be used for, in the most common scenario, virtualization. And the more you start using storage spaces, the more you realize that it really is more of a SAN infrastructure without all the SAN cost and expenditures. Now, storage spaces aren't the same as a SAN. They don't get the same benefits of a SAN. Like a lot of times, you're going to get the performance benefit of backplaning with the SAN. You're going to get ODX, which is offloaded data transfers. Now, you get offloaded data transfers if you have support for it in your SAS enclosure. So as you start approaching what you would consider a SAN, the two big components of a SAN is going to be the controller, which handles the I/O in and out of the enclosure, and the disk enclosures themselves. So the disk enclosures, the benefit of using JBODs, or also called just a bunch of disks, is really that you're separating the enclosure from the physical hardware, and that allows you to set up redundancy. So you could set up two servers connected to the same JBOD enclosure. With extenders, you could set four servers up connected to the same JBOD enclosures. So depending on who your OEM is, chances are they're going to have a solution that comes with servers, SAS controllers, and enclosures. And it's just really a matter of speccing out the workload needed to provide you with the level of storage that you need. And then once you get to the point where you're ready to start virtualizing your storage, that's where this demonstration picks up. So the hardware that I'm going to be using, I've got one physical server and I've got five physical disks. Okay, this could be two physical servers and 30 physical disks with a JBOD enclosure. It's all considered the same to storage spaces. The only thing you can't use for storage spaces right now, you can't use fiber channel, and that will be coming soon in the future. But right now, it has to be direct attached storage, SAS storage, or some combination of the two. Okay, so obviously the benefit of storage spaces is going to be saving cost, and it's also going to be flexibility and manageability, but also scalability. Okay, so you can grow as needed, and then you can set up different priority levels for protection as you start moving through your configurations. The Windows storage stack, like I said, came out with Windows Server 2012, and it's been enhanced with Server 2012 R2 to provide more flexibility and capabilities on the storage tiering and the capacity side. It also has better logging and better management of your different LUNs and your different virtual disks. So most of this can be handled with either WMI or PowerShell as well. I'm going to show you how to do it through Server Manager, but there are other ways to automate this if you wanted to automate this. Okay, so let's walk through the setup of a storage space. Okay, so the first thing I need to do is look at storage spaces. And you can see I've got one storage pool here. Okay, if I click storage pools, I've got one storage pool here. This is called the primordial storage pool. What the primordial storage pool is if you look here, you can see I've got five disks, disk one through disk five. The primordial storage pool is any disk that hasn't been allocated or partitioned already will be part of the primordial storage pool. Whether it's SCSI, SSD, or SAS, it's going to be part of the primordial storage pool. Once I create a storage pool based on that, the disks that I allocate to the new storage pool will be removed from the primordial pool and they'll be added to the new pool. Okay, so the quickest way to do that is just right-click and go New Storage Pool. Now, a storage pool is different than a storage space. A storage space is actually a usable collection of disks that's already been configured, whereas a storage pool is really just the raw disks that you're going to base your storage space on. So there could be a one-to-many between spaces and pools. Okay, so I'll just call this pool one. And there's my server and my storage space it's going to come from, which will be the primordial pool by default. Now, as I select which disks do I want to put these in? And you can see these are all SAS disks. So I'm going to select all these disks. And as far as the allocation goes, you can do automatic, hot, spare, and manual. The way that you configure this, if I wanted to set these up as automatic, all it means is that they're automatically going to be allocated into the pool and used for storage as soon as I start the storage pool. If I wanted to, I could leave one of these as either a hot spare or a manual. Hot spare just means if there's something wrong with one of the discs, it will automatically bring in the hot spare and recalculate the disk capacity and the storage based on that hot spare. Manual means that you have to manually do that. And so why would you leave it as manual? A lot of administrators will take and leave a hot spare as probably about 10% or 20% of their disk pool, and then they'll have a couple set to manual that they can just go ahead and allocate as needed. In our environment, I'm just going to leave one of these as a hot spare. I could leave them all to automatic. It really doesn't matter in this demonstration. But just understand that you have the ability to allocate disks and leave them as hot spares, so they're not going to have any data written to them until something goes wrong with another disk, and then they're going to be brought into the pool as as an active disk. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and click create here, and this is going to create my storage pool and update my cache. Now, if I click this little checkbox says create a virtual disk when the wizard closes, we'll click this checkbox. So what I did is I basically just took what's the equivalent in a SAN environment as going in, picking a set of disks, and then setting those disks up as a an array. And I haven't done anything as far as LUNs or mirroring or RAID configuration or anything like that yet. All I've done is I've just selected the disks that I want to bring into my pool. Okay, so by checking this box, it's going to create a new virtual disk when the wizard closes. Now, all a virtual disk is essentially, it's a LUN essentially. So I can put as many disks or as few disks as I want in the LUN, and then when I create the LUN, I can use that for applications. Okay, so we'll click next here. Okay, so it shows me pool one, 631 gigabytes of capacity. So I'm going to click next here. And I'm going to call this one vdisk1 for virtual disk one. Now, if I had SSD disks in there and it saw them, it would allow me to set up tiers, but I don't, so it won't. Okay, so as far as the protection and the resiliency, simple stripes data across all the physical disks. It's the fastest, but it's also the least protective of your data. So workloads that require any level of fault tolerance, you probably don't want to use simple for. Mirroring is a 50% overhead. So that means if I've got 600 gigabytes of storage and I mirror it, I'm only going to have 300 gigabytes of effective storage. Parity is kind of the best of both worlds. So you got two types of parity. You got single parity and dual parity. Single parity is basically a RAID 5, and a dual parity would be basically mirrored RAID 5s, kind of like a RAID 50. And the idea behind this is that you can take the parity drives, and you don't have to have a 50% overhead for your capacity, and it still takes the nature of the striping, so you get a lot of the performance improvements that come along with striping as well. So I'll go ahead and create a parity space here. Okay, now as far as provisioning goes, you can do thin or fixed provisioning. Thin provisioning is not gonna, it's kind of like a reparse point. It doesn't write to the disk and allocate that entire disk up front. It just basically allows the operating system to add more space to the storage space, add more effective space to the storage space as it needs it. So if you looked at the capacity would be correct. It would say whatever the capacity was that I associated with it, but I wouldn't actually see the use on disk until I actually wrote some data to it. Where fixed is going to allocate that point and it's going to create it up front. I'm going to use thin for now just for the speed of the demo, but fixed, if you've got a really a process or an IO intensive workload, fixed, you'll actually get a little bit better performance with fixed because it doesn't have that layer of resolution between the active and the inactive. Okay, size. I'm going to go ahead and set this up as a 300 gigabyte volume. I should say a 300 gigabyte disk. I'm going to click create. Done. Now, create a volume when this wizard closes. Now, when you create the volume, this is what exposes this to the operating system and it lets you do things like share it out for Hyper-V or use it for Exchange, whatever you're going to do with it. Okay, so now it should start looking familiar now. So now all I'm going to do, so it comes up as disk six. It's called vdisk on 300 gigabytes and it's part of the storage space. It's not clustered. I'm going to click next here. I'll just leave it at 300 gigabytes. Assign it a drive pointer. Now I can use NTFS, or if it's going to be something that doesn't require some of the bells and whistles of NTFS, you could use the resilient file system. Resilient file system came out with 2012. It doesn't support compression, doesn't support extended attributes, doesn't support encryption, but it is probably the most reliable file system that's out there. The NTFS file system has been greatly enhanced with 2012. You won't see a lot of check disks run on it. It kind of fixes problems on the fly. If you do decide to run a check disk, it's actually going to run a check disk and it'll do the scan while the disk is online. And then if it has to repair something, it'll go through and just repair the affected part. It doesn't take the whole volume offline to do it. And I'm just going to call this one B disk one. Click Next, and then click Create. Okay, that's it. So now I've created a storage pool, I've created a storage base, I've created a virtual disk. Okay, so you can see these are my storage devices. This is my storage space. And if I bring up Disk Management, I should see a new 300 gigabyte volume. There it is right there, vDisk. So now I can use this for any application that I want to. If I wanted to share this out, I could use this as the remote path for my Hyper-V storage. So the idea behind storage spaces is it provides you a lot of the flexibility and functionality that you get with a SAN, but it's going to be a heck of a lot less expensive because you don't have to invest in all the SAN infrastructure for it. And again, it doesn't replace the SAN. If you wanted to integrate this for certain workloads, you know, for example, the workload, obviously, if you're going to have this running in Windows Server, it has to be able to consume an SMB workload. Okay, so if this is going to be a Linux workload or something like that, then it may not consume SMB. So you really have to kind of pick your battles with storage spaces. There's been, you know, probably a little bit of conversation around the storage industry as to whether they're designed for tier one workloads or not. Absolutely. I mean, when you set it up, if you set it up with the right level of capacity, performance, and resiliency, then you can run your tier one workloads on it. In this case, this is standalone. I set up a simple parity. So it's up to you what you want to run on it. But your size and your capacity is really going to be based on the number of disks and the amount of enclosures. Yes, you can use direct attached storage, but the best practice is obviously to go out there and use some sort of a storage enclosure.
All right. Thanks for watching. I hope you enjoyed that episode of OEM TV showing you storage spaces and how to configure it. I love the walkthrough and I love the benefits that it gives customers, the flexibility, the scalability, and just the ease of use. More options are always good. So I hope you enjoyed that episode of OEM TV on storage spaces, and we'll see you next time.